We all have a story to tell. Let's tell yours. Welcome to the Intellectual People Podcast with your host, Jason. Come together and listen to journey stories and more from interesting people. Welcome your host, Jason.
I often post on various audio forums, and I want to take this time to just thank them. In no particular order, they are audioscienceReview.com, audioroundtable.com, audiocircle.com, audiophilestyle.com, avnirvana.com, diyaudio.com, gearspace.com, and the Parts Express forum. Thank you so much, and I really appreciate your viewership and enjoy. Today on the Intellectual People Podcast, I have Adam from Close Guitars. How are you doing today, Adam?
Doing great. Thanks.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining. Adam, I'd like you to take me back to your childhood and tell me if you were interested in music.
Yeah, so my mom was a really great mom. She signed me and my three brothers all up for instruments without us wanting to or without us knowing, actually. So, both my parents are from Poland, and there's kind of this Eastern European mentality that everyone should know how to play the piano because piano is a very, you know, important instrument that is a staple of the family in the house. And so we had a keyboard growing up, and my oldest brother, he was signed up for violin, actually. So he went through the Suzuki school in violin. And then the next brother, who's Ian, who I ended up co-founding Close Guitars with, he was signed up for violin, but then he quickly changed to guitar in high school. The next brother was violin, and then I was violin for a year, but then piano. And piano was my main instrument starting in fourth grade. And I remember the day that I walked through the door coming back from school, and my mom was like, "You have piano lessons in an hour." And I was like, "I don't have time to do piano lessons because I'm already doing gymnastics 4 hours a day. I already have too much homework." But I started piano every Friday afternoon.
Interesting. And you played up through your teenage years, I presume?
So it was kind of interesting. I remember not being thrilled about having to learn the piano, but I do remember really enjoying the challenge of learning. Reading sheet music was challenging. Even, you know, at the age of 10, fourth grade, that's already a little late to start reading sheet music fluently. So it was a slow process for me, and I wasn't always looking forward to it, but I do remember being really excited about when a piece came together and I could play it without the sheet music. I felt like I had unlocked this magic secret code, and I could just play it and it sounded beautiful. That went on for 2.5 years, and it was in middle school around sixth, seventh grade that my piano teacher actually quit. It wasn't me who quit because she was going back to school for a master's, and she no longer had the bandwidth to teach. And so I took a few year break, and I started again in high school after I watched the French movie called Amélie. And the soundtrack to that movie was just so incredible that I felt like I had to learn it. And I knew that I had the skill set to learn it. And so that's what turned me back onto piano. I ended up learning the whole soundtrack. And I started playing about an hour a day for the rest of high school. So that was sophomore year of high school.
Do you consider yourself classically trained?
I wouldn't go that far. When I was practicing, I was learning pretty hard pieces by Chopin, Mozart, Beethoven, and it was all classical music that I was learning, but I wasn't learning the theory that I needed to, and there was a big gap in my learning. And again, it was 1 hour per week that I was learning. So it wasn't like I was on track to go to the conservatory. It was more I was on track to be a hobbyist pianist who could kind of self-teach and learn songs eventually, slowly, but eventually. Yeah.
Understood. And then where'd you progress through high school?
I ended up just learning all the songs that I really wanted to learn. I would still learn classical songs, definitely. Chopin means a lot to Polish people because he's kind of the most famous Polish pianist and composer. So a lot of his stuff, a lot of Jan Tiersen, who is the composer who wrote the Amelie soundtrack. He has a few other soundtracks that are really good. Anything that I would hear that sounded good, there were some pop songs that had piano renditions that I would learn. It was just a really fun hobby for me that was so different than everything else I was doing, which was mainly, you know, schoolwork and sports. Instruments is kind of just this whole other domain that I could sink into, and it was a more creative process, more expressive, and kind of just for me. Because at that point I wasn't giving recitals or I wasn't performing anywhere. I was just learning for fun.
How did you decide to go to school to be an electrical engineer?
Yeah. So that's also family related, but not through my mom, but my dad. My dad was an assistant professor in Poland before they moved to the US in 1981. And he was a mechatronics professor, so mechanical and electrical engineering combined. And so there, you know, growing up, we lived in as much of a science household as you can get. Our Christmas presents were kits for learning different science tools, different science principles. You know, conservation of momentum. We had this toy where you had a big ball and increasingly smaller balls on a stick. And if you threw the big one, you know, X distance, the small one would travel way more. And then you realize that mass has an impact on momentum. So this is what we got when we were like 8 years old, when all of our friends were getting video games, we were getting crystal growing kits and all this stuff. So that was, I'm really grateful for it now. And I was at the time, but there were definitely some times where I was like, man, can't we just get normal gifts that all of our friends are getting, like an Xbox or something? So we, you know, engineering was part of everyday life. And with that, you know, I loved science in all elements, in all the different school systems, middle school to high school. And going into college, it was kind of an assumption that engineering would be studied, which... Now looking back, and you know, I ended up going to Princeton for electrical engineering, and the humanities are heavily emphasized there. There's a very good science program as well, but I loved writing, I loved history, I loved all the other subjects as well. But there was this kind of understanding that engineering is the most rigorous and most difficult major, and so that is what should be studied. So I was really looking at the engineering. So all the brothers, my oldest did biomedical engineering, then mechanical engineering, then biomedical, and I was electrical. But that was really kind of what I was looking at. And I've no regrets to studying electrical engineering. It's, you know, it's such an interesting area of study. And I had this attitude of, I want to study something that is going to be hard to self-study afterwards. And, you know, it's really difficult to on your own pick up a digital circuits book and start learning logic for circuits, whereas it's much easier to pick up a history book and read the history book and analyze it that way after college without necessarily professors and teaching assistants and all that. So I'm glad the way it ended up.
So tell us what your guitar company is.
Yeah. So Close Guitars makes carbon fiber instruments, in short. When we started out, our mission was to make carbon fiber instruments more affordable. So at the time, you know, Ian's background is that he, you know, he was doing mechanical engineering at Brigham Young University in Utah. And Ian, growing up, probably took advantage of our dad's hands-on experience the most. Ian was the one who was building things all the time. I mean, if there was a project in high school where he built a paper shredder, where you'd put a piece of paper and tug this rope and the piece of paper would come through and it would naturally shred based on the mechanical design, which was quite tricky to build. And he was designing full bikes down to the drivetrain, everything in CAD in high school. And so Ian had made a guitar in college for a class, and he wanted a carbon fiber guitar, but they all cost like $1,500. And he had composites experience, so he thought, you know, why not just make a mold and make my own guitar? It can't be that hard. And so he put hundreds of hours into that first guitar, and he made one. And that was really the idea from the beginning. You know, carbon fiber instruments are great for travel because they are made out of carbon fiber and they're durable, humidity, temperature resistant. However, by being expensive, it almost defeats the point of them being good travel instruments, because now you're traveling with a luxury item.
Right.
And if you're someone who wants to be kind of carefree and traveling with a guitar, you don't want that. You don't want a prized possession with you in case it gets stolen or lost or broken. So there was this kind of conundrum that we thought the solution would be just more affordable travel guitars. And yeah, that's really how it started. And we've stuck to that mission. Our acoustic travel guitar is still $600, which is far and away the most affordable. We've since come out with more expensive models, bigger models, ukuleles, high-end models as well. And those are very popular with people. But we do always want to preserve that that backpacker attitude for the travel acoustic.
Are the electronics on the acoustic electric off-the-shelf components, or are you designing and manufacturing them as well?
So for the most part, we use Fishman electronics for everything.
Okay.
And on the acoustics, it's all Fishman. And we are just launching electric guitars and basses. And on those, we do have some OEM pickups where we've worked with a supplier who has pickups, and we tested all of them and we found some that we like, and we brand them.
Are you planning on doing anything else to use your electrical engineering background in the electrical side of things, if you will? Amplifiers?
Yeah, it's a great question. Amplifiers are definitely not out of the question as far as our product lineup goes. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think everyone who studies engineering agrees to this. It's the engineering framework and the engineering mindset is the most useful thing that you get out of an electrical or out of an engineering degree. You know, I'm largely in charge of marketing and have been since the beginning, and I didn't know anything about marketing. I didn't even know the term. I didn't know what marketing was when we started Close Guitars. But marketing to me is a very logical puzzle. You know, there's the hypothesis. I think that we have this type of product. We think these types of people want to buy it. We think this ad copy, this text, this distribution method is going to be the best way to get this ad to those people, and they'll react in X, Y, and Z way. And we have these metrics for analyzing if that's going well, and these if it's not going well, and if it doesn't work, then we'll iterate and do another test. And you know, that to me is extremely logical. It makes a lot of sense, and that really is the scientific method of having a hypothesis-driven approach. And And we try to apply that to everything, whether it's marketing or manufacturing, and you know, even interpersonal skills, and how people work together on a team. You know, one person thinks this, one person thinks that. Through discussion, we arrive at the best method of communicating. You know, there are a lot of different applications.
How many people make up Closed Guitars?
Yeah, so right now we are at about 18 people. We have the majority are builders, so the manufacturing line. And then we have someone in production manager, George, customer service and fulfillment. Marketing for Close is 4 people. And then myself and my brother. Yeah, so it's a pretty small team.
It's a might be small, but it's still a large small business, if you will, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. For us, we very, very early on, and you know, I think there were a couple of things that made us think this way, but you know, you read all this stuff and hear podcasts and interviews from founders, and everyone always says, you know, you have to delegate and you have to empower and you have to trust, and you have to make yourself almost replaceable for the business to be at the most efficient. If anyone's a bottleneck, you have to identify that and figure out what's the better way. And so we've always tried to do that. And we, you know, our manufacturing system is something that we're very proud of. There's instructions for everything. There are video instructions, written instructions. We have data on years of manufacturing for each task, and we know, you know, the average time it takes, one standard deviation above. We analyze every week performance. And so I think because of that kind of delegation mentality, we prefer to have a bigger team, even if we have more part-time people, because then the roles are more segmented, and we don't have, you know, 4 people doing everything. Instead, we have 8 people doing a little bit here and there.
Let's get into some technical parts of the guitars. I think a lot of people don't realize how carbon, not only the raw material, but actually a product is made, whether you use pre-preg or you do a wet layup. And I don't know what you guys use. So if you can explain that, that would be great.
So we started out by doing wet layup. So about the first 2,000 parts were made from the raw carbon fiber material into the final bodies at Close Guitars in Provo. And then we switched to having a supplier who produces the body in whole and the soundboard. And then we switched to becoming assemblers on those parts rather than creating those parts from scratch. And the move there wasn't even cost related, it was more scaling related. We were identifying that as a huge bottleneck for us, as far as, you know, if we wanted to double capacity, we'd have to build double the molds. Polishing molds takes a long time. You know, for people who don't know, the way that we were doing our bodies at first was, you know, carbon fiber is like a fabric, just like a t-shirt. Before it's infused with a hardener or a glue, it's this fabric that you put into the shape of a guitar. So the mold is in that shape. You put the carbon fiber in, you have some kind of material on there that will allow, if, you know, we were using epoxy to flow, so flow media. Then you put a silicone bag on top of that so that it doesn't stick to anything. And then you infuse the epoxy through using a vacuum pump. So for us, it was a 16-hour cure. The epoxy would fill out. It would sit there, and then you'd, you know, turn off the vacuum pump, take everything off, and you'd have to pull out this body from the mold. And that process definitely has wear on the mold, and so you have to polish the mold regularly, you have to wax it. There are a lot of steps to having the part come out the same every single time. And then, you know, you trim that body, you trim away that excess fabric on the side, and you're left with, you know, a really nice looking, pristine body that you can then attach a soundboard to. But yeah, we found that, you know, the mold maintenance was very tough. Doubling mold capacity, building molds was very tough. Training people was difficult. It's a very, you know, no mistakes are allowed. If you scratch the mold, that scratch is going to be on every guitar. So it's very different than wooden guitar manufacturing in that sense. But yeah, so that's kind of a little bit of background on the carbon fiber parts.
Are they made overseas then? The bodies are mainly made overseas?
Yeah, so now they are. Yeah, we have a supplier in China that makes the bodies and the soundboards. And we work very closely with that factory. We've been to China many times. Sure. And it's awesome working with them, actually. They make some parts for some really high-end brands in other spaces, so not the guitar space. But they make carbon fiber soles for some of the best shoe companies. They make ski poles for some of the best ski brands. And yeah, it's been, you know, that's been a really interesting part of manufacturing, seeing how we do things here and seeing how they do things in China. And I think, you know, Chinese manufacturing, especially when it comes to instruments, there's often stigma associated with that. Mm-hmm. But our methodology and kind of approach to overseas manufacturing is we want to control the parts that ultimately make the impact on the consumer. So, you know, stuff like playability, the nut, the saddle height, everything related to that, you know, the frets being crowned, leveled, all that is extremely important. When you pick up a guitar and you play it and you're like, wow, this sounds good, or feels good. We want to control that always. And whether we make the body or if a supplier makes the same body, to the same quality level somewhere else, that does not have the same impact on the final product. And so things like that, when we were looking at, okay, how can we scale faster? How can we build this team faster? We started identifying processes like that. And it's been a pleasure working with a lot of those factories.
For the people that are watching this that might have carbon fiber cars, parts, or even tubs, all right, it's important for them to know that carbon fiber guitars are probably not put into an autoclave, correct?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Because it's not a structural part.
Right.
Right. And I only mention that because there's a lot of people that associate carbon fiber with a structural part rather than it being an aesthetically pleasing part with other uses.
Yeah.
Right. And right. While your guitar is far stronger than, say, what could be a fiberglass or Kevlar with fiberglass or even a wood guitar,
yeah,
it's not structurally made where there's honeycomb sandwiched in between and it's put into an autoclave while it's vacuum bagged with prepreg, correct?
So you could, for example, our soundboard is a sandwich material with foam in between. We tested honeycomb, and we ultimately switched to foam. But yeah, I mean, you could make, you know, if you added several layers of carbon fiber to the body, I mean, you can make a truly indestructible part. And you have to balance, you know, the instruments are extremely durable. I mean, we ran our ukulele over with a car.
I saw
and the hybrid, it survived the hybrid. It didn't survive the 4Runner. And then, yeah, at the end of the day, you don't need a guitar to be able to handle a 4Runner. That's not the point. But yeah, you know, it's awesome how you can tweak a few variables and you can build something completely different, or, you know, it comes down to knowing what you're building and for what purpose. But it's, guitars are, I think, one of the hardest things to make, because there are three standards that has to be held to. You know, there's the cosmetic standard,
right?
And then there's the functional standard, and then there's also the auditory acoustic standard. And if any one of those three things fail, you have a dissatisfied customer. You know, it can look great, it can function correctly, but if someone doesn't like the sound, they'll return it.
Right.
Just like if it sounds great, but has a huge scratch on it, right, they're not going to be happy.
So Adam, how do you balance the getting that sonic signature that's so subjective to all of us, in terms of, because I would imagine that the thickness of the body in certain areas will change it, unlike a standard wood guitar, right, where the wood and the bracing becomes really what's making the tone, where, yeah, with carbon fiber, I would imagine you have a lot less bracing, if any, internal bracing.
Yeah.
However, that layers will also have a very large impact of the sound, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. We've probably built over 100 different types, wow, of guitars over the years. We're constantly testing. And I would say that testing is still not over. I think everyone who owns a product system knows that you should always keep testing and tweaking. Some of the tweaks are minor, but, you know, early on we had to determine how many layers should we have for the body. And so that was a fairly easy part of the iteration, because we quickly found that the soundboard is by far the most responsible part for the sound of the guitar. And it's almost like, if you think about a trampoline, the soundboard is like the trampoline for the sound. The body is acting like a wall, but for the most part, the sound is coming through the sound hole, and that soundboard is going to be what's letting out everything that you hear. And we did many tests that we were fascinated with. I think my favorite was cutting the body depth in half. So instead of having, you know, a 4-inch acoustic, we cut that down actually more than a half to like 1.5 inches. We basically just totally trimmed the body depth, and it kept everything else the same. And we were blown away at how that thin body guitar sounded incredible. And conversely, we did many experiments where the body was the same, and we wouldn't have a sandwich panel. We would just have carbon fiber, or, so those are kind of the earlier tests. And now tests are more, you know, you go for that marginal gain as you get closer to the desired result. And, we tried, you know, little, so at first we had no bracing, we had bracing, and then we removed bracing, and then we added in different parts, and we changed the bracing structure. And then we tried something that we have a patent on, which is kind of reverse bracing, removing material from the soundboard on the inside. And we found that was a big step for us, in reaching the desired sound. Because if you take a wooden soundboard, there's a good amount of flex when you're flexing that piece of wood, because it's really thin wood. And our soundboard, when you try to flex it, I mean, it barely moves, like 1 millimeter. Wow. And so it's very rigid. And so we were thinking, how can we still have the exterior durability, but giving it a little more flexibility? And we found that removing that material on the inside worked wonders for the sound. And in a way, again, similar to a trampoline, you know, you can't bounce on a stiff board, but you need to have some give.
Do you recommend most customers get a carbon soundboard rather than a wood one? Because don't you offer both types?
So we only offer carbon fiber on the body and soundboard, but our neck can be made out of wood.
Okay.
So the neck is the piece that we have both in wood and carbon fiber. I think the coolest part about carbon fiber is that you're building it from scratch. And so you can really do anything with it. And, you know, you can determine the layers, the thickness, the density, the shape. And then once you make that, you can still cut away material or add material, whether it's bracing or etching, bracing. So that's I think my main point about carbon fiber. And that's really the coolest part. You're not cutting down a tree and shaping it from the material you have. You're building it from the ground up. As far as the wooden neck or the carbon fiber neck, we found that the neck has the least impact on sound of the three main parts. So soundboard, body, neck. And, you know, it's somewhat logical. If you just look at, you know, where is the sound coming from? It's coming from the acoustic body. I think you get a lot more importance on the neck when you start looking at electric guitars, because that's, you know, once you're amplifying any sound, minor differences will have a bigger impact there, amplified. And then a solid body electric is a totally different beast than an acoustic instrument. But as far as the wooden neck and the carbon fiber neck, you know, the full carbon neck is definitely stronger. And so as far as durability goes, that's going to be the clear winner for temperature and humidity differences. Our wooden neck does have two carbon fiber stiffening rods in it. And so it's not just your average wooden neck.
Okay.
And we came out with the full carbon. So we're kind of referencing our hybrid series and our full carbon series here. The hybrid series is the wooden neck. The full carbon has everything carbon. You know, we came out with that series largely customer driven demand. A lot of people wanted that. They kept asking us, when will we come out with one? So that was the main reason. And two, we wanted to have an instrument that was kind of on par with all the other carbon fiber guitar makers out there, because there are other brands and they're all full carbon. And so we just wanted to kind of play in that arena as well.
What advantages over your competitors do you believe that Close has, other than the financial aspect?
So I think there are a few when we were just starting out. You know, it's both a pro and a con that my brother and I had absolutely no idea what we were doing. You know, we were looking at the industry with completely fresh eyes, and you know, we weren't thinking about the guitar industry. We were also thinking about e-commerce and digital advertising, and I was learning all this at the same time. And so, you know, I think our approach to our founding years were very different than your traditional guitar company. We didn't go to retail first. We learned how to use Facebook advertising, Google advertising, and we shipped directly to the customer first. And so I think now you're seeing that big switch where everyone's realizing, okay, you know, digital is not going anywhere, so we need to figure out how are we going to integrate this, or direct consumer is not going anywhere. How is this going to coexist? You know, Taylor is going to have their website, but they're also going to have dealers, and there's going to be some friction between buying it online or buying it in the store, especially when there are quotas that stores have to hit and all this stuff. So, so our approach was totally different in the beginning, and I think that was our greatest asset in the very beginning. We just had a different approach to marketing. We were also, you know, when we were first starting, we had pretty interesting marketing where we were trying to showcase the durability of our instruments. And so we played golf with our guitars, baseball, we ran them over with cars. And that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, because they were like, how dare you treat an instrument like this? And we were like, well, hey, you know, look at Casper mattresses. They're dropping plexiglass on eggs on their on their mattresses to show, you know, that it's very firm. And so we were kind of thinking more outside the box at the beginning of how do you market a guitar. And we weren't just looking at, okay, well, we have to market playability, sound, and your traditional marketing points, but we were really getting creative. So I think that's one thing on the marketing side. The price point, you know, yeah, obviously attractive. I think manufacturing wise too, we put a lot of effort into figuring out a lean manufacturing system. And, you know, when you compare a carbon fiber guitar to wooden guitars, a carbon fiber guitar has way fewer parts. You know, our body is one piece, so that already is a huge manufacturing, strictly from a manufacturing standpoint, that's an improvement in terms of minimizing moving parts. There's no glue there on the back to the sides. So from the beginning, we wanted to make an effective lean system. And
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Can you explain for those listening that don't know what lean is?
Yeah. So I guess everyone interprets lean manufacturing differently, but it comes down to having simple processes. I guess I use lean in two ways, both lean as a company, in terms of efficiency. You know, one example of being lean as a founder, and again, I think this is an advantage of Ian and I were both in college when we were starting. And so, you know, we had a couple $1,000s to our name each. And so, you know, we had to found an LLC. I Googled how do you make an LLC and figured out how to make one for the cost of $15, which is what it costs to make an LLC in Utah. And that's a lean approach. And other people who are maybe well capitalized or funded with either venture capital or family or angel investors or whatever, you'd hire a lawyer and pay them $2,000 to make your LLC for you. And so that's, I think, being lean as a company and just being efficient. Lean manufacturing, you know, I understand to be simplifying your manufacturing methods wherever you can, and designing with manufacturing in mind is also extremely important. A lot of people will create a product that, you know, looks incredible and super cool, functional, and then you look at it and you're like, wow, making this would take 50 years. And that's because you don't think about, okay, how am I going to make each part? How is this part going to fit into the next part? Are you going to injection mold this part? Are you, you know, if you are, you know, instead of having a corner here, you could have a rounded edge here that would make it 10 times more simple part to make. And my brother really is an expert when it comes to designing with manufacturing in mind and eliminating steps where possible, eliminating parts where you don't need parts, getting down to what makes the biggest impact, focusing on that and having no kind of frills aside from that.
Great, thank you. Where does Close go from here?
Yeah, great question. We come out with a lot of products every year, actually, even if they're just iterations on some of our models. But, you know, we started the travel guitar, then was the acoustic electric travel. Then we came out with different colors of all those, which was also for, you know, it's not just like painting a product a different color, but different weaves, different materials to get the colors there. We tried some Kevlar guitars as kind of an experiment that didn't really hold. We then came out with the ukulele, then our bigger full-size guitar model, then the full carbon acoustic line, electric guitars and basses came out earlier this year. That that's a big pivot for us. There are actually, to my knowledge, there are none of the acoustic carbon fiber makers also make electrics and basses. So we're kind of the only ones that are now in both. Okay. That's going to be a new arena for us. And we're still just starting to build the very first electric guitars and basses for our first customers. So I would say, you know, this year, we'll really be nailing down the electric line. Going forward, I think we want to keep making awesome instruments that no one's thinking about. This year, we also came out with an 8-string ukulele. There are no other carbon fiber 8-string ukuleles. mandolin. We have some forms on our website that allow customers who are interested in an instrument that we don't make to let us know. And so we have cutaways there. We have a cello, violin, upright bass. There are a lot of instruments that we could make. One way that we mitigate risk is already having consumer demand for those instruments that we don't yet make. Right. But, you know, carbon fiber is an awesome material for a lot of instruments, and we have the skill set to make a lot of them. It just takes a lot of resources for designing the new molds, the new manufacturing method, even down to shipping, packaging, all that. Every single product, a lot of people don't realize, has so many steps related to it that for us, it's important that we maintain the best quality as we do everything. So we move kind of slowly in that sense, but I'm sure as we grow and as our team expands, you know, maybe we'll be moving faster here in the next couple of years.
Adam, what's your limitation? Could you make a horn instrument?
You definitely could. I mean, you depends how you make various parts, but sure. you could really make most instruments out of carbon fiber. You know, horn instruments, metal is also very strong. And so I think it just depends what benefit you're getting. I think when I think metal instruments made from a strong metal, I think, you know, with carbon fiber, you don't get a huge benefit. It would be much lighter. It would sound way different. I'd be really curious to see, to hear how that would sound. Yeah. But yeah, that'd be really fun. And maybe someone will do that.
Well, someone hopefully being you.
we'll put on that on the long calendar.
I mean, it's got to be hard when I hear you talk about you and your brother, where you're two people from an objective world in a subjective business, right?
Yeah.
In terms of the end product, right, is really subjective because it's every musician cares about how it sounds and how it feels. And that's not universal, unfortunately, right? Now, right. I would imagine that a carbon fiber instrument certainly has to hold its tune better, correct?
Yeah, we found that, yeah.
And that is, of course, a very big advantage over a vintage guitar that might go out of tune fairly easily, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, it definitely is tough being in a subjective product space. But I will say, you know, we are now in this era of good customer service where every company is expected to have great customer service. And, you know, that's awesome for the end consumer. And it's quite different. It's not like that everywhere. For example, restaurants in America are very different than restaurants in Europe, where, you know, in Europe, the customer is not always right sometimes, and they're not afraid to tell you that sometimes, or make you wait. And I think, at the end of the day, it's not just carbon fiber instruments that are subjective. It's also wooden instruments too. And I don't think there's nothing wrong with that really. You know, whenever anyone emails us and they're like, hey, I don't think this guitar sound is for us. I want to return it. You know, that's a better outcome than that person keeping that guitar and not liking the sound and playing a guitar that they don't like. And people, that happens with wooden instruments too, carbon fiber. So at sure. the end of the day, I'm actually pretty excited about the reviews that we get. We have, everyone. So the person who's in charge of customer service, one of his responsibilities is pasting every review that we get into our general channel in Slack. And everyone that builds the guitars reads every review. And we now almost exclusively get 5-star reviews. We'll get a 4-star here and there, but we almost never get low star reviews anymore. And it's so cool to read those reviews because it gives life to what you're making. And it, for me, it's extremely important motivation wise to remember that we're not, you know, cause it's a two-sided coin for subjectivity. The people that do like the instruments absolutely obsess over the instruments. And it's really cool to see what people do with it. I mean, we get emails about people taking the instrument to Everest Base Camp or the top of Denali or hiking the Pacific Crest Trail, which is a 3,000-mile trek, carrying a guitar where every single ounce in your pack matters, and someone's bringing a 2.7-pound acoustic guitar with them. So, you know, I think the subjectivity ultimately is awesome, and I would rather be in that kind of industry than making carbon fiber shelves or something where it's purely functional and you can't really get too passionate about a shelf that's holding some stuff on it.
Adam, you just triggered a thought in my mind because it's how it works. You said a travel guitar and a backpack. What about making, for those people, I don't know if you have an abundance of people that truly backpack with their guitars.
Mm-hmm.
The shell is now a container, and the back of the guitar, literally a panel with button head screws that opens up, and now it can become a container to hold stuff. So you're utilizing the inside of the body of the guitar.
Yeah. So we actually, so as you know from our site, you can take the neck off of all of our acoustic instruments.
Yep.
And because it's just a bolt-on 4-screw neck. And when you do that, the strings stay attached at the bridge and at the tuners, but you now have access to the sound hole. And so actually when I travel, I often will stuff a lot of stuff into the body. Because you can pretty much fit, you know, like all your boxers and socks in there when you're traveling, even for a month or something. Well, so we definitely, that's definitely a good use for the guitar body if you're really tight on space. And we'd make a gig bag that collapses into a backpack. We have a neck sleeve that you put the neck in and it attaches with clips to the backpack. The gig bag kind of folds down and it becomes a quite compact duo there. But yeah, it's, you know, you can get really creative. And I think every backpacker orients their stuff differently. Ultimately, if you're using your guitar every day, I think most of the through hikers that have our guitar, they find a way to attach it externally and the neck stays on. So it just depends. I usually travel with the neck on unless I'm going into a suitcase, then I'll collapse it and then I'll put stuff in it so that it's not an empty volume in a suitcase. But, yeah, everyone can kind of choose their preference, which is the cool part.
Adam, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you would like to share with us or anything that I missed that would be worthwhile mentioning?
Yeah, I think you hit most of the points. Pretty good questions. The only thing, that I think is interesting is my brother and I actually started another company called Skillboard, and it's a totally different product in a totally different space. It's a balance board that you ride on a ball instead of a roller, which is kind of the more common balance board that people know.
Yeah.
And for us as entrepreneurs, both Ian kind of on the product technical side and me on the business side, it's been really fun for us having learned a skill set in one industry and then apply that skill set to a totally different product. And I think and now we have actually our marketing team and our product team, and a lot of our departments are working on both brands. And we found a lot of success with having, you know, totally different ideas and products, but kind of routing them through a similar framework and producing another really cool brand. So that's something that we also have going on in addition to Close Guitars, but very, very related and unrelated.
Well, since you brought it up, is that an active current product that people can go purchase?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's called Skillboard, and the site is skillboardusa.com. And it actually is almost the same size as Close Guitars, and it caught up in just a year and a half.
Wow.
So it's kind of crazy how quickly that brand has grown. And I think that's in large part the audience and the target market is bigger, because that kind of targets almost everyone, really. But I think the learning process that we went through Close Guitars and the mistakes we made there, we skipped a lot of that for this one. So we've been able to do things more effectively.
Is there any carbon fiber?
No carbon fiber.
Okay.
No carbon fiber. It's actually, it's 100% wood.
That's ironic.
Yeah.
That's really funny. Is there a reason why you don't do carbon versions and then cross promote? Because obviously people could have their travel guitar that's carbon on their back while they're riding their carbon fiber board.
Yeah. So a carbon fiber skill board would be unnecessarily expensive.
People like
we've thought about making one. Yeah, some people do. Yeah. But no, as far as the functionality of the board, wood is kind of what makes the product the most affordable for people. And that's again, an important factor for us. We want people not having to dish out too much money to get a cool product. But yeah, you know, who knows? There is a lot of cross-pollination that you could eventually do with a fitness brand and carbon fiber capability. So, you know, who knows what's on the radar for that.
Very cool. Well, Adam, I really do appreciate your time. And other than your website, are you guys active on social media anywhere?
Yeah. Yeah. Facebook, Instagram. Those are the main two channels. Our YouTube channel. We have a lot of good stuff on there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. And I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening. Find us on YouTube and Facebook at the Intellectual People Podcast and online at theintellectualpeoplepodcast.com. Check back for exciting new episodes.